Welcome to Alpine On Air. This week I sit down with a true career coach who has over 20 years of experience under his belt. Just a few months ago, Jock Reed was given the opportunity to coach with the Norwegian team at the World Cup event in Killington, Vermont. Let's take a listen.
I started coaching when I was 19 and now 46.
Okay.
So, been coaching my whole life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And was that like, was that the plan or just kind of, like, did you ski before? Were you an athlete?
Yeah, I was an athlete and grew up in Quebec.
Okay.
Thought I might get into engineering, but never worked out. And I moved out west, lived in Whistler and kind of just got into coaching. I mean, I started coaching at the ski club I grew up at, but got more involved into coaching and instructing when I lived out west, and it just kind of snowballed from there and just turned it into a career pretty easily.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you were, when did you move to Ontario? You were out west?
Yeah, so I was out west from like 90 to 2000 and then met my wife out there, Kristen.
Okay.
She's from Kingston originally. And,
oh, same.
You're from Kingston?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Right on. And she was working for Xerox at the time, and my career was in flux a little bit, my coaching career. So we actually moved to Ottawa. She got a job transfer to Ottawa, and then I took a hiatus from coaching for a year, and then got back into coaching when I was living in Ottawa. And then that's how my involvement with Ontario came about. I was coaching there for a bit, and then took a job with the Ontario ski team. In 2004, I think.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, and then I worked with the team for 4 years. And then a year at Craigleith. And then I was the head coach at Devil's Glen for 4 years. And now I'm back
at Craigleith. Back at Craigleith.
Yeah.
Doing, is it U14 specific, or is it?
U14 and U16 head coach.
Okay.
Yeah, so I manage those programs, essentially.
Okay. Yeah. So that's what, how many athletes is that?
Like 70.
70.
Okay. Yeah. 70 of our high-end athletes, because we have a bunch of other U14 and U16 athletes. So they're Division One or O Cup.
O Cup, yeah, yeah.
O Cup athletes.
Right.
Ontario Cup athletes.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
And then, so let's get into the Killington beast. How does that happen?
It's funny because actually from my connections is when I worked in Ottawa.
Yeah.
A guy that I worked with in Ottawa, his name is Tim Gefeller. We worked together for 3 years. He was running the FIS team. I was running the U16 team at the time. Back then it was called K2. It was actually 14 and 15-year-olds. 13 and 14-year-olds.
Right.
Because they changed the age grouping. Anyways, he went on from that job to becoming the head coach of the men's Quebec ski team, and then he ended up working with the national team with the ladies for almost 8 years, and then from there became the head coach of the Norwegian ladies program. So we've always kept in touch, and as soon as I found out there was a World Cup happening at Killington, I decided, okay, we got to figure out a way to bring our team down there to watch it, because I wanted our kids to experience the race. And then it just so happens that Tim was short a coach because they were only coming to North America for that race and then going back. So they didn't want to bring too many people over
for that race. Spread thin.
So he said, what are you doing? I need another coach. I'd love to maybe, use your help on the hill. I said, perfect. I've never coached at the World Cup level, so I thought it'd be a great opportunity to kind of get inside the ropes, so to speak. And spent 2 days on the hill, part of the atmosphere, which was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And there were, 15 to 20,000 Americans cheering very loudly.
That's so cool.
At a ski race, which I've never experienced, So the atmosphere was like, as I said to you before, it was like the ACC right? When the Leafs score.
Let's go.
So to experience that at a ski race and to get the kid, our kids to experience that, I think it went a long way, and that was my goal.
Yeah, I didn't realize that you brought Craig Leaf kids.
We did, yeah.
That's cool. That's
awesome. And then we did a training camp afterwards.
Oh, that's really cool. That's such a cool experience for them.
Yeah.
That's sweet.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I think the first day the kids, like, they were a bit scattered, and I don't know if they really sort of, and this is what the coaches were telling me, because I was on the hill, but I had other coaches down there that were kind of trying to look after the kids and trying to get them to soak it in. Mm-hmm. And they said that the first day was tough because the kids were all over the place, but they said by day two, they said their plan was to try and keep them all together, relatively speaking, and try and get them to watch the race. And I don't know, I think it took a day for the kids to understand what exactly was going on. But by day two, like, they were fully engaged and really enjoying the experience. And yeah. For, you know, 12 and 13 year olds, which are, you know, for them to keep their attention on something that's not on a screen for more than, you know, like a couple hours, like, that's a challenge in this day and age. And I think on day two, like, the coaches said that they were engaged.
Really sunk in that they were at a World Cup.
Yeah. So I think that was a cool experience.
Yeah. Sure it was. So you said that was obviously the first time you coached at that level. What was the next highest level you coached at before, previous to Killington?
Provincial ski team. So provincial national ski team, okay. Championships.
Yeah.
NORAMs, that kind of stuff. Okay. Yeah.
So what was the...
Are we running here?
Yeah.
Oh, we're running.
Oh, yeah. I thought we were
rehearsing.
Oh, no. We're really live.
Totally.
Oh, yeah.
Totally off the cuff.
That's how we do it.
Perfect. Okay. All right. I like it.
Yeah. Sorry. I guess I should.
Yeah. That's okay.
Yeah. It just works. I find it kind of awkward if you go in with a...
Yes.
Like, we're starting now.
Right.
So.
Okay.
Yeah. What was I saying? So what was that jump like from whatever, you know, you were saying provincial level to World Cup level? Like, what would the athletes, the coaches around you, the environment, like, what was that jump? How big was that?
Well,
jump?
Obviously, I mean, it's not as different as you think. Just trying to remember some of the things that we discussed with Tim, you know, during those 2 days. I think preparation is massive on that side of things. Access to resources are much bigger on the World Cup level, meaning timing, video, technicians, all that stuff. So, you know, although I believe the provincial ski team job is probably the hardest because you've got to compete against the national team athletes. You've got to try and beat them to be able to, you know, make some headway for your provincial ski team athlete to show the national team coaches that your provincial team athlete belongs there. But you don't necessarily have the same resources that the national team does in techs, physios,
right.
All that kind of stuff. So, but at the same time, I mean, the higher you are, the more the pressure's on, the more the media's spotlight's on you. In Norway, I think that, and Europe to a certain degree, the media has a much bigger impact on how the coaches and athletes perform than it does in North America. So I think countries like Austria, you know, if they don't perform on a couple weekends in a row, it's, you know, the coaches know. Right. And the presidents of the organizations know, right? So to a certain degree, there's not that much of a difference. But like I said, I think preparation-wise is at another level. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
How do the athletes, like, receive you? Were they like, who's this guy? Or what
yeah, was it was like? Interesting. I wasn't quite sure on how that would go, but I give credit to Tim. He really made sure that the athletes knew exactly what was going on and did a great job at introducing me. And I met some of the athletes and coaches the night before. We actually went on the hill. And they were all super happy to have me because it was just an extra person that could be an extra resource to them. And I didn't try and impose myself in any way. Tim got the information from me. I actually was on the hill giving course reports, and the reports just went directly to Tim. And then Tim did his thing from there, which essentially just gave him another set of eyes on the hill. And I got a chance to interact with the athletes, and the athletes were, super keen and actually quite, I think, open to discussing anything in the matter of what kind of things they were doing. You know, I think Tim briefed them that I'm a lifetime coach, so yeah. I don't think it mattered to them that I was there. They were happy that I was an extra person for them.
Right.
Yeah.
Was there a language barrier? Did you?
They speak, you know, they, Norwegians are pretty fluent in English.
Okay.
Just like all the European countries now, you know, I mean, definitely for sure. Tim was the only English speaker there, but he's the head coach. So all the communication that's on the hill happens in English.
Okay.
But the athletes definitely communicated in Norwegian, which was almost impossible to
yeah.
understand. yeah, I mean, all of it's in English, so there was no problem there.
Wasn't
yeah.
a big issue.
Yeah.
I wondered about that.
Yeah.
Even you and I, like, sort of off the hill, I wondered kind of in the athletes' village or whatever what the main language was, but
yeah,
I guess it makes sense. That
it's English.
It's English.
Yeah. Yeah, like within the, you know, the area where the athletes had reserved for them for eating and you know, recuperating and resting, again, it's mostly English, but, you know, you definitely get pockets, you know. There is a lot of French as well with French Canadians and yeah. And the French from France. And I mean, I think it used to be that Austrian was the language that that ran ski racing, but I think slowly that's shifting towards English.
Hmm. Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah.
So, okay. I know a lot of athletes have kind of like pre-race superstitions or like weird yeah. stuff that they do before the race.
Yeah.
Do you, like, as a coach, do you have any weird habits like that?
Superstitions before a race,
or in general, I guess.
You know what? There's a funny one, especially when it's cold. Somebody once told me, never shower in the morning. You should always shower at night. If you shower, you're just getting rid of a lot of the good oils in your body that keep you warm during the day if it's cold.
Okay.
I've always kind of maintained that one a little bit. Okay. Of course, it was from a European, so.
Right.
no, not really any superstitions on that side. I do always keep a bib in my backpack on race day, an old bib that I've kept, if an athlete forgets their bib, that I've got that bib to use for them, mm-hmm. Which is kind of, and it's sort of become a little bit of a lucky bib. So yeah, I've used it a couple of times.
Yeah, no, I'm sure yeah. that's useful. That actually kind of leads into another thing I was wondering yeah. about is like what... If you kind of walk us through like a typical day or like the night before, like what do you have on you on the day? And like, did that change coming back to the previous question, like from provincial level to the World Cup? Did yeah. your preparation kind of change or the things that you brought to the race change? Or is that a very set thing that you've built up and have ready?
Yeah, I think it does change. I think there's a lot more to take into consideration that when you're a World Cup coach compared to development coach or something like that. Mm-hmm. The equipment is all the same, what you're carrying and what you're wearing.
Yeah.
There will be some stipulations as to what you need to wear when you're at a World Cup, because the sponsors and media come into play. You know, there are certain restrictions as to what you can wear on the hill.
Mm.
Where you can stand is also something else. Like, you can't stand in front of banners. You have to stand behind them mm. as a coach. All the equipment is the same, you know, maybe the World Cup coaches don't carry drills as much unless they're setting, but they definitely have tape measures and, range finders and, you know, sunglasses is another big one.
Yeah.
Proper eyewear. To my knowledge, coaches aren't required to wear helmets, for World Cup on the World Cup hill, but some nations have started requiring their coaches to do that. I know Austria, I think, is leading the way a little bit in that area, and some coaches even on their own are wearing helmets on the hill, but it's definitely not it's not enforced like the first and third base coaches in Major League Baseball, which look a bit odd out there.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Do you have a kind of specific coaching philosophy that you've had through your career, or
you're putting me on the spot?
I am. You yeah. don't have to answer. You could say no. You wait yeah. the podcast, but
right.
Yeah, I was just curious.
You know, I don't have like a mantra as a lot of people seem to have, like in the bottom of their email tag. I still haven't found one yet.
That's where it matters. As long as the email tag is there.
Yeah, exactly. But I think I've described this before. My philosophy is one that involves long-term development, mm-hmm. where trying to think of the things that are needed for athletes at all the different levels and not necessarily getting too caught up in results and them skiing perfectly at a certain age, and more focused on their overall development and make sure they have all the skills that are necessary. And sometimes to develop all those skills, you need multi-sport. You need all kinds of skiing, meaning free skiing, technical free skiing, skiing without supervision, and obviously racing and skiing in gates. So I think a lot of times we get caught up in doing too many gates and too many races and forget that there's a ton of skills that need to be learned outside the gates, and how we manage that time is super important. My philosophy has always been to try and do a lot of free skiing and develop skills in that respect. So, yeah.
Because kind of going off what you're saying about long-term development, is it harder to coach someone who's already reached that elite level and who has, you know, has a lot of those skills down pat, and it's more of those like finite little details? Is it harder to coach someone at that level versus like a U10, just because they have, you know, so many things that you can improve on?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think when you're into refining, less of your work is focused on the technical side and more of it is focused on all the other performance factors like equipment, which is a huge factor for athletes at a high level. What's their setup? You know, small adjustments there can make a huge difference. Obviously their physical level, you know, what they're doing, their strength, their quickness, their speed, you know, those are the areas, you know, mental, another huge factor. So, it's you're just focusing on different areas, and I think when you're working with a U10 athlete, most of your work can be focused on the technical side, and you can still do a fair bit of some of the other stuff. But you know, if most of your work is on the technical side, then you're probably doing your job. So it's just making your focus on different aspects of the athlete's overall sort of, you know, development, right? That's how I see it.
Yeah. Did you bring anything specific back? It was awesome that you brought the kids to Craiglith, but did you bring any sort of specific wisdom back to your club or the way you run things there?
If
you
kind of a little bit. Like there's some of the things that Tim talked about on the Hill. I haven't, you know, him and I have been going back and forth a little bit via Facebook and texting, you know, through the years. But to just spend 2 days with him on the Hill and pretty much just shadow Tim a lot, and it was great. I mean, he didn't mind me shadowing him, and we discussed a fair bit of stuff. Some of the stuff that I remember was, and this was a classic, he said, you know, on World Cup, you can make a big difference on race day with how you're coaching the athletes. He said that a lot of the coaches that he seems to work with, he said that the hay is in the barn, so to speak, and my work is done as a coach. Mm-hmm. But his philosophy is there is a ton that you can do on race day to make sure that that you have all the information necessary to give to the athletes so they can perform at their best. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely one thing that I took away. You know, inspecting the course maybe even before athlete inspecting is open to just get an idea of what the course might be like, going to measure certain gates. Just doing a lot of the work behind the scenes that you need to work your butt off on race day, not take a ton of breaks, that kind of thing. Another thing that kind of stuck to mind was when they inspect with the athletes, they really try and focus on the areas of the course where athletes can make speed. The natural tendency is for coaches to spend too much time on problem areas and try and over-explain how to get through problem areas, when chances are the athletes are so good, they'll figure it out on their own. So why don't you focus on the areas where they can make speed, the positive areas, and that way the athlete can get a better perspective and not get so caught up on maybe a tough gate or a tough terrain or all that kind of stuff. And I see it happen locally as well. And that's definitely something that we've worked on. with our kids at the first few races that we've done. And I think it's worked. I think sometimes we overcoach, we talk too much, and especially in this day and age when kids are not very auditory and they're listening, they're very visual and kinesthetic, I think the less we talk and the more we focus on, you know, positives, I think the athletes can get something and get a learning, you know, tool from that and transfer it into good performances. Mm. Yeah. So those are the two main things I think I took away to apply to our kids.
Yeah.
At Cridley. Yeah.
Speaking of which, the season's already underway, but what are you looking forward to this season, and how does the sort of U14, U16 landscape look?
Yeah, it's good. You know, we've always done a good job in Ontario to develop some of the better U14s and U16s in the country. Mm-hmm. I think the more we continue to work together as a province and locally as a region of Southern Ontario, the better off we will be. I like the fact that we did have some races, in that holiday season to kind of see where we're at. So are the U16. So that gives us a good sort of like a benchmark. And then we can go back to training a bit more and then focusing on some of the bigger events that are coming up towards the mid and end point of the season, which include Ontario Cup finals and Can-Am finals for both U14 and U16s, and obviously national championships for our U16 athletes will be happening up in Thunder Bay.
Thunder Bay, yeah. That's right. That'll be good. Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. I'm sure they benefited from your sort of widespread experience and including. Yeah. That time at Killington, so mm-hmm. It's a pretty neat perspective, I think.
Yeah, I think the last time they had a World Cup there in the Eastern United States was 1991.
Yeah, I was reading.
So I think it was a long time coming. I think that the number of people that showed up showed that ski racing is alive and well in the Northeast United States. I would like to see it being exposed in the Eastern Canada as well. Mm-hmm. Hopefully maybe the World Cup can learn a thing or two from having gone to areas close to larger markets like New York, Boston. I'd like to see a World Cup closer to Montreal and Quebec City, and Toronto for that matter, and benefit from the larger population that we have here in this part of the continent. Yeah. And it just makes our sport even more in the conscious of the general population out there, which seems to be bombarded by hockey, basketball, and football to a certain degree. So any way to get ski racing, I think, in the minds of people like people living in Toronto and Montreal and Quebec City, I think it would just be fantastic. And, having a World Cup in Quebec City could have the same effect that I think that World Cup had in Killington, like I said before.
Yeah, I think fans and athletes are hungry for those new sort of experiences, new sports. Yeah. if they've been exposed to just hockey, soccer, football, whatever their whole life. I think there's definitely a good audience that would be interested in going to those sorts of events. And
yeah, they've been doing city events. Like I think there's one coming up in Stockholm, I think, on the World Cup. It's coming up in the next couple of weeks. That should be exciting. Mm. But and they usually do it like on ladders and stilts, and it's done like in a parallel slalom format. So there was talk about maybe doing something like that in Quebec City. I know that the crushed ice is a huge fan favorite, and to be able to do something like that in Quebec City would be, in my mind, be off the charts. Yeah. And why not? Why couldn't you do it? I know they had a snowboarding event at Fenway Park a couple of years back.
Yeah.
And why couldn't you do it at the Rogers Center from, seat 500 all the way down to the center field or whatever. So figuring out different ways to do things like that. I think the World Cup is, the FIS is changing their ways a little bit. They're trying to modernize. They realize that the old way of ski racing is not necessarily getting through to the younger population, and especially North Americans to a certain degree. So yeah, different ways is, I think, better for our sport.
That'd be pretty cool. I would go to that event.
Yeah.
Just got to make it happen.
Absolutely.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was the main kind of points I want to cover. Is there any other, any funny stories, unexpected things that happened? Anything else you want to get out there while you're...
Where, in Killington?
While you got the mic? Killington or just in your career, whatever.
Well, you know, I mean, I just wanted to say, like, I'm, you know, I get given a bit of a hard time because I grew up in Quebec and I lived in BC and now I live in Ontario, and I think I've been referred to as the Quebecsican. but I enjoy living here in Collingwood. I think it's a great place. Our kids were, you know, they were born in Ottawa and they've lived and grown up here in Collingwood, and I think it's a great spot. Having worked for Alpine Ontario, I think it's a great organization, and I consider myself quite Ontarian now, which is kind of cool, and I think I've put enough roots down now to really get behind Ontario athletes, Ontario coaches. As far as funny stories, none's really coming to mind.
I'll put you on the spot,
but it's a lifelong thing. Sometimes the funniest moments are the ones that are least expected. The morning of, things that happen, there's all kinds of stuff like that. Big thing is to always not take ourselves too seriously. Laugh at ourselves.
Could be your email tagline.
That's right.
Should put that in little italics, maybe. Work on the fonts.
Never take yourself too seriously.
Yeah, I think it's great. It's perfect. Right.
Okay.
Well, I appreciate you sharing the stories and your experience at Killington. Yeah. It's cool to hear about.
You're welcome.
Thanks for doing that,
Francisco. I think this is great doing these podcasts. I think, Alpine Ontario is lucky to have a guy like yourself to modernize themselves in their communications. And I think more stuff we do like this, the better it is for the sport of Alpine skiing.
Appreciate that.